Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Michael Chakraverty.
And I'm Mark Watson.
And this is the Menkind Podcast. We're going to take a deep dive into masculinity, exploring what being a man actually means, along with a variety of brilliant guests.
You know, men talking about men is a notoriously underrepresented area of podcasting. Not anymore.
So, as you might have noticed from the title of this episode, it is not James McVeigh today.
Yes, it took us just 2 episodes of our precious new project before we made a major administrative error, which was...
We just got a bit excited, really.
We got overexcited, but the audio is not quite ready. So we do have James McVeigh, we're not bluffing, but he's not in this episode because me and Michael made the oldest mistake in the book.
Which is to introduce the wrong guest. However, we do have Travis Alabanza, and they are absolutely fantastic. And this interview is really interesting, despite the fact that I'm slagged off quite a bit at the start of it.
I think this is a good chat, yeah. And I reckon, I'm confident this is right. What would be bad is if we say this and it still isn't even Travis. If it's someone else again, then it starts to look bad.
Please put in Travis now, producers.
In about 20 seconds, you should hear Travis Alabanza talking to us.
Let's go.
So if you listen to this podcast, you'll know that our intros are often quite laboured. Me and Michael sort of getting each other's way for a bit and then the guest eventually comes on. So we've streamlined it. And now Michael's not even in the process. It's just going to be me, Mark Watson, the brains of the podcast. And I'm very happy today to welcome Travis Alabanza. Hello, Travis.
Hi.
We're very grateful to have you on. We'd like to start by asking the guest sort of to introduce themselves and say what they do or who they think they are or anything about themselves, really.
Wow, what an existential question for a Saturday morning.
Sometimes people break down at this point, I won't lie to you.
I'm Travis Alabanza. I'm, depending on where, I'm a performer. I make theatre. I write. I chat about stuff online. And since this COVID has happened, I've learned I'm a very professional and competitive articulate player. That's what I'm now becoming. That's what I'm retraining as.
I'm not very good at... Hello, I'm here also. I don't think I've spoken yet, which is unusual.
I thought I might get through an episode without you, but fair enough.
How are we with articulate? Like, where did we go wrong?
There's definitely some anger management issues that I'm working through in it, but I would say it's all about the partner. You know, I've played with a few different people now, and it's, do you vibe under the same stress management, you know?
So articulate is the game where you have to describe something but not using certain keywords, is that right?
So you have to describe yellow without saying yellow.
Yeah, and then, like, also it's the game whilst you're doing that, you simultaneously try and lose as many friendships as possible at the same time.
Yeah, a lot of games are like that, aren't they?
See, I have a problem where I'm not particularly competitive, and that makes people around me very cross because I genuinely couldn't care less.
I'm more like Travis. If I played articulate, I am looking to win, honestly. Or should I say I'm looking to conquer, vanquish, triumph,
classic
succeed.
Straight white man, isn't he? Honestly, Travis.
Oh my God, I want to play with you.
Me too. Well, we're both from Bristol as well, so maybe we don't know what Christmas is going to be like, but if we can at some point get an articulate game in and just destroy the rest of the field.
Yeah, sure. My Christmases have been so boring recently, so I could just absolutely introduce a white man.
It's about time you had a
white man at Christmas. Can you bring the seasoning, please?
Hashtag white man at Christmas. Yeah.
What is your favourite seasoning, Mark?
My favourite seasoning?
Yeah.
I mean, I can only think of stuffing, and I don't think that's right. Is that?
Literally proving the point there, Mark. Thank you so much.
Right, well, on we go with a bit of chat.
So we always start with a similar question. We kind of kicked us off talking about masculinity and what it means and where all that comes from. It is, growing up, when do you first remember being presented with an idea of what masculinity or being a man was?
I was trying to think about this morning because I was like, oh, there's no like warm-up questions. They go straight in. And like,
no,
I,
we do.
We are brutal questioners. Yeah, that's just who we are. Yeah, that's just who me and Michael are.
It makes sense for a program about masculinity. I think for me, and it was really hard for me to figure it out, but I think that my first encounter with like what it means to be masculine or the idea of masculinity is always through me failing at it rather than like an example of it. Like I think about, it's so cliche, but PE, being younger and like having to do physical education. And I was actually okay at it. Like I was not bad at sport, but I remember that the way I used gestures when I scored points was being punished.
Right.
So like we would play like, I guess it was rounders or whatever, the one with the bat and the ball. And after I ran around the whole thing, which is like a task, I would like cheer really like expressively with my hands in the air, you know, do like a real, you know, low key high fag kind of like I've finally screamed a point.
Yeah. You scored a rounder. You've got every right to celebrate.
Exactly.
That's the whole point of the game.
Exactly. And I remember that I think looking at how I was then responded to, like, I just want a point for my whole team. But then the whole focus wasn't that I won the point, was that I was being punished for how I celebrated winning that point. Mm. And I think obviously I wasn't young enough to like look at the gender theory of that. But I was definitely young enough to know like, oh, shit, something that I do needs to be altered in order to not be punished. And I think that's what masculinity has always been to me.
That's interesting.
And have you ever altered who you are in order to not be punished?
Oh my God, of course. Yeah, I mean, like, so I guess this is a podcast that people can't see me, but like, you know, I'm a gender non-conforming person with a beard coming through in a dress, and I grew up on a council estate. And so like, you had to alter so many parts of yourself to survive. Mm. You know, I think that's how, if I'm honest, masculinity works, is by like, I think that so many people that are either forcibly ascribed masculinity onto themselves or people that are willingly choosing to be a man, which I can't relate, but are having to constantly decide, you know, how much of their full selves they can show in order to not be punished. I genuinely believe that, you know, I think when we go outside and we're seeing all these people perform a version of themselves, that's so that they are not punished for being more complex.
So when you were performing a version of yourself that wasn't yourself, when you were trying to kind of portray that masculinity, what did you find yourself doing to perform that?
I wore two clashing patterns instead of three.
The perfect disguise.
I said, no one's going to figure out what if I just move the zebra print with the leopard print and not add the tiger print.
Oh yeah, having grown up in Bristol myself, that would definitely camouflage you.
Well, you know, obviously I also didn't wear dresses. You know, I would change the items of my clothing. Feels like the most basic form. But I kind of want to go away from that because I think it's the one that like is always spoken about. Like, oh my God, now you're wearing a dress. You came out as trans and this red lipstick falls from the sky and you're putting it on in slow motion. I feel like actually more what I edited was my ability to be romantic with my friends and myself. The ability to be wrong. Mm. The ability to like figure things out, the ability to like not know the answer to everything. I feel like when we talk about transition, everyone's always focused on the aesthetics of like how you physically change.
Yeah.
But actually like becoming and being around other people that weren't so rigid around their gender taught me that I didn't have to be rigid about all these other emotional things too.
I find this really interesting, Travis, this idea that, I mean, we don't know each other, but I'm a straight man. I suppose I have signed up to, you know, be a man in the sense that we're talking about. There are lots of things about me that are probably not traditionally masculine, or at least don't tick traditionally masculine cliche boxes. But nonetheless, I am that sort of, you know, basic guy in the sense that you're not, and in some ways Michael's not. So I suppose what I'm asking is, and this is not a loaded question, I find it fascinating, in what way do you think I am, like a guy like me, is having to perform masculinity without even being aware of it? What sort of things am I being forced to do that aren't maybe my full self? It's not a fair question because we don't know each other, but in a way that's why I'm asking. Like, what do you think are common things that men are made to do just by putting on that cloak of masculinity?
Well, it's really hard because it's obviously huge generalizations. And I did this show called Burgers that was on tour up until we were in Brazil when lockdown was called.
Till we were forced to stop touring. Yeah.
Yeah, till we were forced to stop touring. And the only reason I'm bringing it up is not to plug show because that's long gone, buried under the thing.
But also, we definitely can plug
your show. No, I mean, to see it in 2017 when we're allowed again now. Yeah. The reason I'm plugging it is because in the show, every night I would cook a burger on stage live with a white man from the audience that I hadn't met. And I was doing this to get over harassment, but also to get to know white men, because I don't have many in my life. And it was really interesting because I was constantly surprised by what I think my assumptions were going to be of them. Mm-hmm. I made huge assumptions. I was like, these men are going to come on and they're not going to know how to process their emotions. They're not going to be able to talk about sadness, all these kind of things. And some of that was really there. But actually what I found was the most common trait throughout the conversations of masculinity we had during Burgers. So there's a point in the show where we cut onions together and I ask them when's the last time they cried and we start talking about malehood. Mm. And a lot of the men said that there were just desires that they had when they were younger that they didn't play out because they weren't allowed to do. And I don't think that stops when we suddenly finish childhood. I think that there are constantly moments in adulthood life where we have desires and then gender tells us to stop doing them.
Yeah, desire doesn't go away after all, does it? It's always there.
It's always there. And, you know, who knows what that desire is for? But I think that masculinity in men, what I see, and maybe why one of the reasons why there's so much violence coming from them is that, you know, it's easier to display anger than it is to display vulnerability. It's easier to destroy things than to lust after them.
So you think masculinity is as much about shutting down aspects of yourself as exploring aspects of yourself?
Oh my God, absolutely. I think the way that masculinity is currently set up, obviously this is huge generalizations because it's always going to be if we're talking about these things.
Of course.
But like, I think that so much of the way masculinity is currently set up in like Western world is to limit and restrain.
Mm.
And it's to
rather
like
than to express.
To express. I mean, you just have to go into the male clothing section to be like, damn, like how boring can one section get?
Was there any positive role models that were men that you have ever looked up to, either growing up or now or both, I suppose?
I definitely think growing up it was harder because I grew up in a single-parent family with my mum. And so it was like the women led the household and my mum's friends were women. All of like my aunties were all around me. All of my friends were girls. So like it was definitely like a longer time until I saw positive examples of masculinity. But I would say now in my friendships, you know, I'm friends with like some, you know, really great men that would probably cringe at me saying they're really great men.
You don't have to name them.
Yeah, they'll be like, oh my God, you just call me a great man. Like,
that's the least masculine thing, we can't bear that.
Yeah, exactly. But I think about like my friends' dads, maybe that's like some like unearthed daddy issues that I've got to work out. But I think about some of my friends' dads who like I found very kind, very warm. I find those questions always hard because I'm like, I think it's just the thing about you that I'm finding inspirational, not the manhood, you know? Like,
right.
It's not, it's so hard to be like, is this the masculinity particularly that I'm finding inspiring? Or actually, is it just you as a person, you know?
Definitely, yeah. And you started talking about burgers, and in my head came in, you said onions and crying. and I did Bake Off last year, and when
did
I
you?
Was on Bake Off, don't like to mention it too
You're
much.
On TV?
Week 7, it got terrible after that. I cried.
Wait, you were... Sorry, I'm really sorry. I got to pause this. I've never watched Bake Off. My mum is like a huge fan. Does that mean I'm talking to someone that's on Bake Off?
Travis, I have to tell you, Michael was not just on Bake Off, but got quite far into the series.
Oh, so my mum's going to... This will be finally something I've done that my mum will be proud of. Okay, great. Sorry, I interrupted you. I'm so sorry. Carry on.
Is that Mother Alabanza? Mother of the House of Alabanza?
That is Mother of the House of Alabanza.
Oh.
It's a Bake Off addict. So she's going to finally gag. Wait, I shouldn't have swore earlier. Sorry, Mum.
Yeah, this guy is one hell of a baker. He got quite a long way into the series. And then actually, yeah, this is where the conversation all ties up. He had some problems with pastry and he cried a bit and became famous.
Well, yeah, well, basically, that's what happened. Yeah. Mother Alabanza will know. What you can do, Travis, after this is watch episodes 1 to 7 of series 10 of Bake Off. After 7, it goes downhill. There's no point in watching.
It's true, actually. The nation's favourite.
But what basically, I have mental health issues, so I have anxiety and depression. And when I start feeling stressed and I start getting overwhelmed, I cry. And that was a really big deal on Twitter and online. Not particularly for me, because I cry most days. I'll probably cry before the end of this podcast. But it was...
I normally manage to break you.
But it really shocked me seeing how many people were affected by my crying and felt the need to tell me that I was wrong and tell me that I was threatening them in some sort of way. I think what you were bringing up kind of made me think about that kind of that trolling world, and I know that you've encountered that a bit, and I wondered whether you could talk a bit about how that's affected you and I suppose where you think some of that trolling comes from.
I don't know, like, first I'm like, we need more people just crying on national TV. I genuinely believe it. Like, obviously I'm not saying that like it probably wasn't like a amazing experience, but I also feel like sometimes when people show emotion or cry, what you're then getting is everyone's projections on how they feel about crying onto you.
Yeah.
Whereas like, as you just said, you're like, oh, I actually cry quite often, that's my way of processing when I feel stressed, or da da da. And suddenly you get everyone else's feelings that they have about showing emotion put onto you. And therefore, for me, trolling becomes about their projections rather than the fact, you know? Like,
yeah.
When people are trolling me and saying, you know, like, I'm a man in a dress, I need to die, like, this is poisoning who and whose kids, you know, I often am like, probably something is so deeply, deeply unsettled with you that you feel the need to, like, come to someone that clearly is quite sure of themselves. You know, I think it's not a coincidence, and this is a bit of a reach, but, like, I'll do it, is that, you know, most violences that happen to trans feminine people, gender non-conforming people, the most deadly ones happen straight after romantic intimacy or straight after sexual encounters. And I often think that that tells us something about the thin line of hate and desire and disgust, is that so often people project hate and disgust onto the very things they might have a resemblance to with themselves.
Yeah, I don't think that is much of a reach. It's certainly something we've heard before, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think that men are often scared of the things that they then try and put down. They're scared of the tears that they've all stifled. So then say, okay, this person crying on national TV is now rupturing that with myself. Mm. And when you're like, bish, I've made it to week 7, cry on, you know?
And when you were cutting those onions, Travis, do you cry when you cut an onion, or do you have a technique? But what do we do to stop the tears?
This is a bit of a spoiler for burgers, but seeing as the show's done, there's a purple knife and an orange knife on stage, and the one I give to the man is slightly blunt.
Oh, you sneaky bastard.
For health and safety reasons, of course. And so, yes, there seem to be more tears coming from the male end in the show.
Takes them longer to cut the onion and they cry more.
Yes.
So one of my friends puts a spoon in their mouth.
Oh, to stop the crying?
And that apparently that stops you from crying.
You should have done that on Bake Off, mate.
Oh, God, it's like a Twitter all over again. But some people cut onions underwater. People wear, like, ski goggles.
What, underwater? What do you mean underwater? Like, put the...
Underwater?
Like, they put the onion and the knife under the water. Do you mean they all
I thought
underwater?
The same as Travis. I thought you meant they went down the swimming pool to do it.
Getting their Kellogg's bag whilst, like, just dimming the onion.
Getting the scuba diving stuff and the snorkel.
Seems a bit excessive for a carbonara, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, almost worth just finding a different way to flavour the dish. Yeah.
So have you always been comfortable expressing your emotions?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
It's a very good question then, because we both thought
of it. It's a cracking question. Yeah.
I'm not sure if I always am still now all the time, you know? Like, I think that I dip in and out. I think I've always been an emotional person, and I've always been someone that, like, from a young age was called dramatic or over the top or larger than life for, like, feeling lots of things simultaneously.
And again, you can make a case that when people are called dramatic or large in life, again, it's sort of what you were talking about. It's just a way of someone saying, you're a very emotionally literate person here. Like, it's right. a term of envy, I often think.
You know, I'm like, life's dramatic.
Exactly.
Like, I'm like, I'm sorry. Everything that's going on is quite a dramatic thing that's happening, you know? Yeah. Like,
how can you be larger than life when you're literally living life?
Yeah, exactly. But I think my mum is like a very emotional person. And so I think that the house was like, I think about my brother a lot. You know, I grew up with my mum and my brother. And my brother is maybe not as loud or like emotionally forthcoming, all of that. And I just think I'm like, how was growing up in the house like? Because me and my mum, you know, we'll be watching TV and we'll go through like 22 emotions in 1 hour, loudly, expressively. Like, we'll go to the cinema and like, I'll have to make sure we're at the back because we're like screaming or we're just very forth with our emotions.
You'd be good on Gogglebox, you two.
I think about this all the time. I think about this so much. I was going to apply. It's like me and my mum would be so good because like she's also African-American. And so she's got that like American accent or whatever. And she loves reality shows. And she loves like competition, which explains her Bake Off hype. To be honest, I'm distracted by this interview because I've not done something to make her proud for like a while. So this is finally it.
Honestly, any Bake Off fan, this is huge for your mum.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I know you went to a summer camp in the States when you were 17, and you were talking about how you'd always been described as dramatic or different, and you'd felt that you were kind of stifling certain areas of expression, because I think it's true. I completely can relate to the fact that when you're growing up, I think expressions of romance or even just admiration or liking another person. But I know that summer camp changed things for you a bit.
Yeah, so when I was 17, just before like trying to decide what I was going to do, if I was going to stay in Bristol or like move to London or whatever, you know, I'd had my first boyfriend by then. I was out. I was going to gay clubs from like 15, 16. Sorry, mum.
The baking will make up for it, don't worry.
Yeah. And I was slowly starting to realise, like, you know, we only had one proper gay club in Bristol, which was OMG. And it was like,
I remember that.
All white gay men. And I was like feeling quite isolated. And I found this summer camp in Oakland, California called Black Girl Dangerous. And it was only for queer and trans people of colour. And this is a time when I didn't even know that there was a thing like that you even could put those two words together. And I like raised some money and we had to like crowdfund. It was all of this. It's very new for me. And I flew over and luckily, you know, I have family in Oakland and stuff, but it was still really scary. And I got lumped into like, I'll never forget it, like a welcome circle where we all did names and pronouns. And I didn't know what a pronoun was. And someone said that their pronouns were them, they. And I was like, what the fuck does that mean? And I found it really hard, like really, really hard. And I was definitely the youngest, not just like emotionally, but like actual age-wise as well. And then I spent 4 weeks with all these people that I guess I never knew that you could like exist in these things. Like I chatted to this person, I was like, I'm really sorry, I'm finding it really hard to get this pronoun thing right. Can you explain it to me? This person was so patient and was like, well, like it's kind of just me deciding that gender doesn't really have an importance in my life. Like it's not really something that I look to myself first or other people. I was like, wow, that's amazing. Like, you're so lucky to think that. And they were like, no, you can try it. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And, you know, I was so stressed from a young age being like, am I a woman? Am I a man? All of my tenseness from a young age was like, I'm clearly failing at being a man. I keep on being punished, whether that's being harassed on the street, whether that's being like shouted at on the street, whether that's being like taken the piss out of or bullied. I'm clearly being punished for not being a man.
And now you're being told that you didn't even have to play that game.
Yeah, that was it. And I kind of thought in my head, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to leave home and then I guess I need to become a woman. But that didn't make me feel good either. Like nothing was making me feel good. And then I met these people in California. It sounds like I took like a fucking truffle drug. I took a truffle in California and realized that you could like not partake.
Just open my mind.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I opened my mind. But I realized that you could opt out.
Yeah.
You know, because we never opted in.
Yeah.
You didn't opt into being a man. You know, you didn't opt into this. And so if it's working for you, fine. But like, if it's not working for you, then like, why are we obsessed with like continuing things that we didn't choose to do? You know?
If you could talk to a younger person who is experiencing what you experienced and looking back with that knowledge that you have now about not having to opt in, what would you say to a younger person who is kind of exploring options outside of having to stick to a binary?
I would say that like making mistakes is really part of the process and to enjoy that. I think I was so focused on like understanding okay, so I'm not this. Well, now I need to understand myself really quick. And actually, like, it's so fun being not obsessed with whether or not you know everything about yourself. And I would say that changing your mind is okay. And that the fear of whether or not you'll change your mind isn't worth more than just giving a go and leaving something that doesn't feel good. Just because you're afraid of, like, what might happen on the other end, if something that you're in doesn't feel good, leave. If your gender's not feeling good, like, leave from it. You know, like, if this man thing isn't working, if this woman thing isn't working, and it makes you, like, uncomfortable and it makes your body tense up, leave. I think it's so interesting that people are so obsessed with what transness does to feminism or all these things that, you know, that whole thing on the other end of that debate is that, to me, transness is about consent. I want consent over my body. I want consent to decide who I am and how it will be, you know?
This thing of success and failure feels like quite a masculine obsession as well, though, would you say? I think you're sort of encouraged to think of, you're not just a man, you have to win at being a man. I think a lot of our male instincts are to do with that. So if you don't feel comfortable with something, you experience it maybe as a failure. I think it's interesting what you say about accept you'll make mistakes, accept you'll go off in wrong directions, because I don't think we're programmed to think like that. I think we're programmed not to accept our own fallibility quite a lot.
Yeah, and I think some of the men I meet that are in my life are men that are, like, not afraid of failure.
Oh, you'd like me.
Not afraid of being wrong.
I mess a lot up.
Basically, what I'm saying is the common thread between the men in my life are failures. No, I think they're very...
Yeah, keep talking.
I think they're very amazing, successful people in their own way. But, like, I think that they're not obsessed with, like, the facade of winning at their gender and being, you know? Like,
I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I think what I also took from what you were saying was the power of change as well. And I think it's particularly important in terms of people who are exploring their gender and the all the options there are in the world. But also to men specifically is allow yourself to change and make mistakes. And it's okay to be wrong. I mean, we can talk about cancel culture all day, but what cancel culture does is it stops the possibility of change. And I think that change is maybe the most important thing, especially if we're looking at the modern man in the world. They need to be able to accept change and go, oh, okay, that's how things are now, and just move on. And I think that's a really fascinating, really you're very articulate, Travis.
I haven't drank a coffee yet this morning, so I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, but when you've got an articulate player of this caliber, it does show, you know, words are never far away.
Our waffle kind of gets put down, doesn't it?
A game could spring up at any moment and they're ready. You can tell they're ready.
This shows why you need to have a really high caliber of articulate colleagues, doesn't it?
Sometimes it gets in the way though, because, like, you'll see that, you know, if you keep it just stripped back and simple, you might win the game, you know.
I think you need to go for references that, like, the other person can relate to. So, like, if they watch Drag Race, you need to, like, go with, like, if they're thinking about a monsoon, you need to go for season 5 winner. Do you know what I mean? Like, you need to kind of play it like that.
Yes, there we go.
One question we ask everybody, and I think it links really nicely into what you were just talking about, is if you were to build a man from scratch, and assuming this person identifies as a man and all of that kind of stuff, what 3 qualities would you want to put into that man?
I don't want to sound like a wanker with my answer. Do you want, like, my actual answer or not?
I don't think we can say we don't want your actual answer.
Yes. After everything you've said about men suppressing their emotions and stuff, it'd be disappointing if we said,
no,
please.
Say things that we
say don't. Something nice.
Well, no, like, the short... Well, it's also, like, how much time do you have. Like, the short answer is, like, you know, I'd build one kind, emotional, da-da. But if I'm being real honest with you...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This will be a soundbite somewhere.
Can't wait. Title of the podcast coming up, everyone.
I'd build one where, like, men... and masculinity, just like femininity and women, don't exist. You know, like, I actually am, like, not really interested in a future where men exist.
That is a soundbite.
Because, and that is not to say that I'm interested in a world where also women exist. I think that gender is, like, inherently harmful.
You think that our entire categorizations need stripping away, basically?
They just need to be done. Like, I think the first violence happens when you're born and you're decided that you're a man or a woman. Mm. Like, that is the first act of violence done onto someone. And so all of these ways of, like, making a good man, building a good thing, I'm like, okay, it's like putting, like, a really nice plaster on an already open wound. But the wound is the gender binary in the first place. You know, I think that sometimes feminism stops at saying men are the issue and women are oppressed. And I think that is a material consequence of already the first site of oppression, which is the gender binary.
You think the oppression exists in the very concept that we're living our lives by rather than specific applications of them?
Yeah. The very first time that we decided that the myth of binary sexes, because it is a myth, there's so many examples of when sex is not binary. The first time we decided that because of the characteristics I'm either seeing on your external organs... or in sometimes rectify in intersex people, forcibly rectifying your internal organs to now fit my idea, and now you have that life, that's the violence. Mm-hmm. And so in my imaginary world, on this podcast, we're allowed to imagine. Because you use the word imagine, that's why I'm giving this wanky answer.
Well, you're absolutely allowed.
We love a wanky answer. It's our favourite kind of answer.
Exactly.
It makes us look slightly less wanky.
I'm going to imagine a world where, we don't even have the concept of man to build.
Mm. A very different Build-A-Bear workshop.
Oh, I love it. I think it's fab.
Yeah.
In terms of humanity, then, if you were to build a human person outside of this binary, outside of all of this, so we've healed the wound, we've taken away the plaster, what kind of person would you make? Three qualities.
Empathy would be, first. You build around empathy and build around the ability to not need to experience something to feel sadness for someone or feel joy for someone there, straight from the beginning.
I agree with that. I do think empathy is the word that sums up incredible. So many essential
Jamie
human qualities.
Jamie Windass has a chapter in their book about empathy, and I think that's a wonderful way of putting it. So empathy's first.
Empathy's first. And then the second is, I'm going to steal Marx, but I think the ability to change and for that to be the fluidity of yourself, to be really central is so important. And I love what you were saying about, we need people to know and us all to understand that we're coming into things and we can learn and make mistakes and grow and be better.
People seem to see personality as a very rigid thing a lot of the time.
Oh my God.
But in actual fact, your personality is constantly in flux, isn't it? Because that's what it's like being human.
Constantly changing. If I listen to interviews I did 2 weeks ago, I'm like, who the hell was that? You know,
just thinking about the future, Travis, listening to this, thinking, what a load of shit.
What a wanker answer on that last one. And then third, I think the ability to tell a good joke, if I'm honest. I really think...
Now you're on Mark's wavelength.
At last.
Yeah, I really mean it. I think that the ability to be able to laugh and the ability to be able to find joy and find fun is so important in a person. And I would think that there's so many reasons why the world is separated and there's so many reasons why we find lineage in our groups and our identities. But in this imaginary we're working from where the binary doesn't exist in the same way, I think the human quality of making people laugh will be very high up on the list.
I do agree with that. If you don't have that, then your brain is so one track.
Without
the ability to see the absurdity in things, you're living a very specific, boring, not just boring, but emotionally cold version of life.
Cold.
Imagine never having a laugh.
Yeah, exactly. I aim to have about 10 before midday, hopefully.
One thing I was going to ask Travis before you go is, I often think about, I've learned a lot from doing this podcast, and I've thought a lot about how society might be better ordered and how we can live better and accommodate people better, basically. I suppose that's the phrase.
Yeah.
Do you feel hopeful for a future where we do manage to do some of these things, where we do break down some of the straitjackets of gender? Or do you think that, in 20 years' time, it's a very difficult question, but do you reckon we are going in that direction, broadly speaking?
I hope so. I mean, I'm still young, I'm only 25, but even in my 8 years of being about feeling open in the world, I've seen such a ginormous change in other people that look a bit like me or sound a bit like me or saying a bit like me, being able to speak and talk and be supported. But I would say that visibility can fool us to think that things are changing.
Yeah.
And actually, I haven't seen a change on the streets,
mm.
you know, ultimately, it's still a daily task to walk around gender non-conforming in this world and not be attacked. And so I think the change will come when we start seeing more protection physically. I'm kind of, everyone's what do we want? And then they'll be it's great we're getting pronoun badges, or it's great we're getting this magazine cover, it's great we're getting this. I'm I want a world where when someone shouts someone on the street, the whole other street stops. And this isn't okay.
Yeah, that's no more than badges and memes and stuff.
None of that.
Actual structural change.
And I don't think I've seen that shift whilst the world has been visibly shifting. I don't think I've seen or noticed a change in the street.
That's a big question, really. Yeah.
And so I'm not sure. I hope so. I think it's really, you need hope to otherwise, what are we continuing to do? We have to hope that things are going to change. Mm. Everything's constantly evolving,
Yeah.
So... what about you? Do you think it will?
I think, and I'm a lot older than you, but if I look back to the time when I was... I hate saying when I was your age, because it does make you feel geriatric, but I was first going to the fringe at about your age, I suppose. That's just a good marker for me. I would certainly say in those 15 years, there's been... it's exactly what you said, actually, Travis. I feel like I've seen enormous superficial differences in conversation, in terminology. The fact I'm here having this conversation, people like me have been forced to re-see things in a way which would have been hard to believe 15 years ago. But at the same time, as you also said, I don't know if I've actually seen
a fundamental shift in attitudes. I think the conversation's there that didn't used to be there, but I don't know if, like, it feels as if there's still a fight to be won over the next sort of 15 years.
Definitely.
But my broader answer would be, yeah, I do think things are changing because, as you say, society continually evolves and the people that resist that make a lot of noise, but they can't actually stop it from happening. I do tend to believe that.
Exactly. And I agree with what you said about hope. I mean, where are we without it?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
That's also very true.
We have to hope for change. We have to push for change. And if we can't see it, we need to make it. And I think that is so important that we kind of come together as a bit of a Live Aid moment, but like come together as a world and like actually start hoping for genuine action.
We've all got these microphones. We could record a single while we're here.
Well, that'd be lovely. This is going to be an awkward eggy bit now, Travis, because you've been really articulate. That felt like a really good ending.
It was very nice.
But now we're still talking.
I would love it.
Because we always do this thing where when they said, you've got to have hope, probably we're just like, Travis Alabama, thank you very much.
That's good. Can we try that now? Can you say something really articulate about hope? And then we'll say, thank you, Travis Alabama. And then that'll be the end.
Shut you down and we'll end the Zoom call just like that.
Wow.
Right, are you ready? 3, 2, 1. Inspiration.
This is... Now you're seeing my weakness in articulate, clearly.
Yeah, but it's not normally played quite like this.
It's not on your teammate. You're just sat there silently going...
I'm so in the moment. I was so in the moment with you both. I don't remember.
Let's get Travis just to say, I have hope, and I'll immediately cut them off.
That's a really good idea. How does that sound to you, Travis?
Sound okay? Yeah, hold on. I'm just waiting for the auto cue to come up on Zoom. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, yeah, ready?
I have hope.
Well, Travis Alabanza, this has been absolutely great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both so much.
Travis has a new show out and they've messaged me to say it is reopening Bish Theatre.
No, it's Bush Theatre. Don't worry, Travis.
The show is called Overflow, which is the story of Rosie, a trans woman trapped in a flooding toilet who recounts her life and memories of all the toilets she's been in. I don't think I can remember a toilet that wasn't my own for at least the last 9 months.
Yeah, this sounds like it's set in a fantasy world where we're allowed to visit buildings with toilets in. But there you go. I guess that's what we have escapism for, isn't it?
It's open until January the 16th, which was extended due to demand. So please get your tickets. I think we're going to go, actually. So you might see us there.
We definitely. We'll see you at the Bish Theatre.
Next week, we have Olympic diver Tom Daley.
Let's be real. I don't particularly like sports.
You can find us on social media at Menkind Podcast on Twitter and Instagram.
Or you can send us an email, menkindpodcast@gmail.com. Why not do that? We will read it as well.
Sounding quite confused there, Mark.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how nice it would be to get an email from a podcast listener. But it could happen.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.